Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
If the God of the Bible really exists, I would go gladly to hell. And anybody happy to go to heaven to worship such a creature is morally bankrupt.
It is because God's wrath is real that his mercy is relevant. Unless you have a real wrath, the biblical concepts of mercy and of grace are robbed of their meaning.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Well, this ought to be interesting.
You be the judge.
You want answers?
Maybe.
I think I'm entitled.
You
maybe.
Want answers?
I want the
We're
truth.
Not.
You can't handle the truth.
Order in the court.
It is time for You Be the Judge, because this tends to be a bit of a one-way conversation. Okay, fine. You can yell at your listening device. But typically, you can only hear me. I can't hear you. Therefore, you have a federal head. It happens to be a Lutheran head. Nevertheless, your federal head, as we play You Be the Judge, is our very in-house Lutheran, Tony Verkennis. Tony, are you prepared for your most serious responsibility to represent the tens and tens of people listening to this incredibly long introduction?
No, but I'll do what I normally do.
Here we go. Story number one. Don't know if you've been following this. Well, it's a rather challenging subject that I fear many of us are going to have to deal with a whole lot more. Up to Grand Rapids, Michigan, we go. Bethany Christian Services. It's an adoption agency, a global nonprofit founded in Michigan in 1944. They have been operating in 35 states, and they place children for adoption. Hence the term adoption agency, Friel. By the way, speaking of adoption agencies, was reading last night, because apparently I've got an awful lot of free time, was trying to find some statistics on the foster care program. And I stumbled into some statistics that are absolutely heartbreaking. If these are to be trusted, and they are because I found them on the internet, 66%, two-thirds of the kids that are currently in the foster care system within 1 year of graduating, in other words, becoming legal and leaving the foster care system, 66% will end up in jail, on the streets, or dead. Two-thirds. Wow. That is a program that does not appear to be having a very high success rate. With those statistics, I saw one of those little pull-down doohickeys, don't want to get all technical on you, that asked, are there any orphanages in America? And the answer was, no, we got rid of orphanages for those much better foster care programs. Really? The foster care system is working better than an orphanage? Look, I get the stigma. I understand that. I don't think it should exist for a young person, but nevertheless, it exists, so I get that there is some. Nevertheless, 66% of the kids who go through the foster care system are ending up dead or in jail or on the streets. There isn't a better program. Now, as a caveat, if you're a foster parent, you're doing a good thing. Don't get me wrong. But there are many in the foster care system, the parents of the foster care system, that are just doing it for money. Besides, these kids tend to get bopped around. There's no stability. Wouldn't it be better, I'm just asking a question, to have orphanages where there is stability? You have the same faces until you get adopted or you grow out of the system, so that you can get an education, so that you know where everything is going to be every day of your life, the same people investing into your lives who love you, care for you. Wouldn't that be better than what we're currently doing if that statistic is to be believed? We can't figure out a better system for our kids than this. Whew, what a sin mess. There are hundreds of thousands of kids, it might even be more than that, that are in the foster program. That is the effect of a lot of sin. And so these kids come out of bad situations no matter how you slice it, and they need stability. Couldn't we come up with a better program than the foster program? But I digress. This is Bethany Christian Services in Michigan. They were informed by them Because you know who they are, don't you, Tony?
They're them.
They are them.
I know who they are.
In this instance, it was the government stating, hey, if you do not start placing kids into LGBTQ homes, we will pull your funding. You will no longer be able to put kids out of the foster system into adoptive homes. Isn't that lovely? What did Bethany Christian Services decide to do? Okay, they said, we'll do it. How did they justify it? That is the question, and that is the question that I think all of us better start being prepared to answer soon. If the government continues down the path that is only barely being slowly blocked these days, if it continues to put pressure on Christian churches, agencies, nonprofit organizations to conform to their agenda, will you be willing to go out of business if it forces you to do something that is against your Christian conscience? Bethany Christian Services is the largest Christian adoption and foster agency in the United States. They had to change their policy or lose more than 1,000 foster care contracts the agency had with the state of Michigan. They were placing a lot of kids. You can put yourself in their shoes for a moment. Yikes! These kids, if we go out of business, what will happen to them? How will they get placed? We better acquiesce, do what we're told. It'll only be a few anyway, and we'll be able to do more good. Tony, as our federal head of the Lutheran persuasion, you are the president of Bethany Christian Services. Do you give in to the government, or do you say, sorry, no can do?
I do what the other Michigan group did.
Which was?
St. Vincent's filed lawsuits saying this is illegal and unconstitutional.
Yeah, there's another organization, by the way, called the Evangelical Child and Family Agency. They said, fine, then we won't do it. And so they lost a ton of their staff, but they've grown back because the government got a hold of them again to go, well, you know, actually, we kind of need your help on second thought. Now, they haven't fully recovered from it, but nevertheless, they decided we're not going to do it. Bethany Christian Services said, we'll do what we're told. Tony, you're saying you'd file lawsuits.
I'd fight it. Or close.
Or close. From the Christian Post Voices. I
mean, you read the explanation?
Yes.
That was about as mealy as it gets.
Well, that's what I was about to share with you. The Bethany CEO described the decision as the only compassionate option. Listen very, very carefully. You will be confronted with this if our current trends of anti-Christian sentiment continue to foment in our country. It could be your... Hey, you will stop preaching about this. You will not indoctrinate your children like that. Or else, get ready. Now, this does have practical application. Let's just say, and this does happen globally. If you recall, the way that Christians are persecuted, the shame culture, we will force you to not be a Christian by bringing shame upon your family. They'll use any means necessary. So what if you've got five kids and one of them is suggesting that they want to be the opposite gender, and you say, honey, no, we got to work through this. Your child tells the teacher doesn't have to inform you, the ball is now out of your court, and they start giving steroids to your kid to become the opposite, whatever they do, the testosterone, the estrogen, to give it to the kids to change them without your permission. You'll get with the program, or we're taking your other four kids away from you. What are you going to do? These are not crazy scenarios, and we're seeing hints of it, even as Bethany Christian Services has to figure out what to do. Here was their explanation. We faced a choice. Listen very carefully, because this is, you can hear somebody's reason for their decision, but the question is, are they presenting it accurately? Or is this possibly a false dichotomy? We faced a choice. Continue caring for hurting children in foster care, or let our disappointment with government requirements supersede our compassion for kids who have suffered and need a loving family. is that a valid Christian argument? I would suggest to you it is absolutely not. That is pragmatism at its worst. Furthermore, that is not the confrontation. That is not what is put in front of them. Here's your choice. You will either violate your Christian conscience, ethics, morals, and values and place little kids into the homes of same-sex couples, or we're going to pull your funding. Now, does that mean that you are not showing compassion? No, it means the government is pulling funding from you. That's what that means. And it's the government that is causing the action, not the service. Bethany wasn't being asked to choose between giving precedence to caring for hurting kids or its disappointment with government requirements. It was being asked to choose between standing on principle or caving to the demands of a secular state. This is an argument. It is a debate that we should be thinking through because it will be confronting you soon. This fellow's response, in my estimation, was not the Christian response. It is not their fault that the government is putting the squeeze on them. And the fact that these kids might have to go without, at least in this instance for a season, it is not the burden of the agency. That burden falls on the government. What say you if you were the president of Bethany? This is Wretched Radio. I wonder what Dr. John MacArthur is talking about.
If you're going to support mission training of pastors, you've got to find people who are training men biblically to be theologians, to be Bible expositors, to be shepherds of their flock, to pour their lives into their sheep. This is the biblical pattern.
Going to go out on a limb here and suggest Dr. John MacArthur is talking about one of his ministries, the Masters Academy International. Seminary graduates from the Masters Sem internationally training pastors to be expositors, upholding the inerrancy of the Bible. If you've been looking for a missionary opportunity that has ripples of impact, you cannot do better than the Masters Academy International. Please learn more and potentially consider supporting the Masters Academy International at wretched.org/pastor.
If you love Don't Stub Your Toe and its thorough gospel presentation, you're going to love Wretched's newest evangelistic booklet, Are You a Rotten Fish? Jesus was relentless about the subject of true and false conversions. Parables about the wheat and tares, wise and foolish virgins, good fish and rotten fish. And if you study church backslider rates, it's clear his concerns were warranted. Are You a Rotten Fish is an informative gospel booklet about true and false conversions. In other words, good fish and rotten fish. Are You a Rotten Fish compares and contrasts the true gospel versus false gospels, the correct response of repent and trust versus incorrect responses of asking Jesus into your heart. All you have to do is hop on your phone, grab your laptop, or go down to the desktop and get yourself to wretched.org. wretched.org/fish to be specific, and get your copies of Are You a Rotten Fish. Visit wretched.org/fish and get your copies today.
So, you don't think that your sponsorship of a Tomorrow Club is worth it, huh?
One of the kids that came, you know, our parents were both alcoholics. The leader said, why don't you invite your mother to come? She started coming and she'd hear little pieces of the gospel and she started drinking a little bit less and started coming to the church, and the church started trying to help them. And believe it or not, even the father stopped drinking and the whole family has come to the Lord. Now this family operates the Tomorrow Club.
These stories are happening all over Eastern Europe. Poor villages, the Tomorrow Clubs invade. They meet with the kids every week. They disciple them. They preach the gospel to them. They have them memorize Bible verses. The kids get saved. The parents get saved. And the local church gets strengthened. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club? $30 a month. 30 little disciples. You can do that at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched. tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Books of the Bible. The book of Micah contains prophecies against the kingdoms of Judah and Israel. Micah warns of God's judgment for idolatry and oppressing the poor, but he offers hope of salvation in the coming Messiah, who is a shepherd, a judge, and a ruler. Those whom God has saved are charged to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with their God.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
This is not the first time that this has happened. This is Wretched Radio. There is another organization, not Christian, as in a 501c3 nonprofit parachurch ministry, but there was an organization that was led by Christians that most certainly catered to the Christian audience that was told by the government, nope, you will provide your service to the gay community. You will, or we'll shut you down. And they too said, all right, we will. Do you remember who that was? Tony Tone or Joey Joey? Nope.
I do not.
Tony, do you remember?
No.
It begins with the letter E and ends with harmony.
That's right. They had to make the logarithm for
gay couples too. For gay people also. Yeah. And they gave in and said, okay, we'll do it. And I understand it's okay, you're going to lose your whole business. So maybe the people that you're helping aren't going to get your help. You have got to compromise and do what you're told by the state, or you will be shut down. Bethany Christian Services, not the first, and I suspect there are other ones that never made it into the news, that were confronted with this sort of demand. We're seeing it with cake bakers. We're seeing it with florists. Now we're seeing it with ministries. Don't expect this to stop anytime soon, and don't think it's going to stop with parachurch ministries, because it will come to churches and it will come to your home. Parents, you will get in line or we'll take your kids. Don't think that happens? Is there something different in our DNA than, say, German DNA, where they've done that with homeschooling parents? We've seen this in Canada too, have we not? Don't think that the state will stop with parachurch ministries or churches. They'll come knock, knock, knocking on your door. There is an agenda here. While I feel bad for Bethany Christian Services, I think they made the wrong decision. We're either going to be Christians who take our hard knocks gracefully, lovingly, in a supernatural kind of way, or we're just going to compromise until there's just nothing really left of the Christian church in the West. There's always going to be the 7,000, no doubt about that. In fact, to be encouraged, I do believe that conservative Christianity is actually growing. It's just not the behemoth we once thought it was, but it is growing. Even the U.S. government cannot overcome the church that Jesus Christ is building. So we don't need to be in a panic over that, but we do need to be asking the question, what will I do when the time comes? And I think our mindset of, well, we've got rights, well, we used to have rights, well, it should be a land of ease where we've got opportunity for commerce and trade, it doesn't seem like that is as protected as we once thought it was. What will you say in other life news? And wow, there's a lot of it going on. You undoubtedly heard the story of the Alabama Democrat who was not pleased that the House in Alabama overwhelmingly approved a bill that would make it a felony to perform an abortion at any stage of a pregnancy. Now, the legislation, it has the exemption of a woman whose health is at risk. We know that that is the camel's nose. It's way too broad of an exception. There shouldn't be any exception ever for abortion, ever. And if a mother's life is at risk, that is not the intentional taking of an innocent human life. That is rescuing the mother. And if the child is lost in the process, we mourn that. But that is not an abortion. There are no excuses to take the life of an innocent human being, period. You save the mother's life, and if the child's life is lost, we mourn. But that is not an abortion. This measure nevertheless passed 74-3. Democratic Rep. John Rogers of Birmingham. I like Birmingham. It's a nice town, Birmingham. They've got that, is it the Viking on top? It's not a Vulcan. It's the Winter Carnival of St. Paul.
No, it is. His name is Vulcan.
It is the Vulcan.
Yeah. All right.
No wonder why I liked it. It kind of was a flashback to St. Paul, because Birmingham and St. Paul, very similar weather, accent,
weather especially, yeah,
football skills, you know, pretty much identical. By the way, yeah. I saw, speaking of the Twin Cities, now I won't be able to find that. My stack is way too big, but it's a church. They're building a bar as an extension of their church.
A Baptist church.
Yeah. It's the American Baptists, I believe.
I don't care. There's still something wrong with a Baptist church and bar in the same sentence.
Well, the excuse, the rationale that this fellow gave was just head-splitting. Hey, we have, my wife and I have the gift of hospitality, so this just seemed like a natural extension. Really? And why didn't you open up a bed and breakfast? How's about a coffee shop? A bar? Well, we just have to reach people where they're, so we're gonna have spirits and spiritual conversations. Oh, they ought to be brilliant when everybody is looped. That should just be a brilliant Christian. By the way, you bore me, sir. So old, so not trendy, so not cutting edge. Come on, come up with something clever and unique, would you? So the Democrat from Alabama, Birmingham specifically, yikes. Some kids are unwanted, so you kill them now or you kill them later. Just giving you a moment to recover. You bring them in the world unwanted, unloved. You send them to the electric chair. Yeah, that's always the course.
It's the progression every child,
every time. Boom, they're going to get the death sentence. What, did 3 people get executed in Alabama last year? 3? Really? So you kill them now or you kill them later. Bad rhetoric. He continued by saying some children who face abortion could be retarded and half deformed. Wow.
Haven't heard those arguments in a long time.
Hold on. He ain't done yet. Donald Trump Jr. responded by saying this is stomach curling and makes Ralph Northam look like a moderate on abortion. He's the governor from Virginia. Every Democrat running for president needs to be asked where they stand on this. The extreme turn we've seen from the Dems on abortion recently is truly sickening. Indeed, it really has been radical. Now, that's not where the story ends. Representative Rogers from Birmingham, Alabama, responded to his criticisms in an interview with WVTM 13, your Birmingham weather station. That's an honor, he said. Thank God. Right on. Him, meaning Donald Trump Jr., being born is the very good defense that I have for abortion. Wow! What? His mother should have aborted him when he was born.
There we go.
What?
This is always a classy argument.
Yeah. And then he wouldn't have made that stupid statement. Well, somebody's making stupid statements. That's a fact. He's retarded or crazy, Donald Trump's son. I knew he was crazy, said the representative. The best defense I've got for abortion right there, looking at him.
Wow. Can you imagine? Just what? And I can't think of an equivalent.
No, I can't either.
If someone of a more conservative stripe had said anything close to that, he'd be in jail.
It's so off the chart. It's staggering. You really have to wonder about this fellow and just where he's at mentally, because this is wildly inappropriate. And this is the utilitarian view. Now, if Donald Trump didn't say that, then we'd let him live and he shouldn't have been aborted. So if Donald Trump Jr. could do something good for us, well, at least that I've determined I like, then we'll let him live. Do you see how dangerous that is? Who determines who's contributing to our culture that we're going to let live? What sort of piano skills must they possess? IQ? Are they good income earners? How do they contribute to the state? Those we let be born, but the others not so much. Wow. The ugliness that is utilitarianism, the ugliness that is the pro-choice debate. Ay, 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 their arguments. Wow. Students, this just in case if you thought this, well, this couldn't possibly get any worse. Hold the phone, Henrietta. Planned Parenthood. The students at University of Texas, San Antonio, they were supporters of Planned Parenthood. They went to the Cemetery of the Innocents. A pro-life group put up a display, a dedication to the unborn children who were killed by abortion. Students United for Planned Parenthood danced around the cemetery shouting, join me now, will you? Stop, hey, hey, what's that? Oh, stop, hey, hey, what's that sound? all the fetuses are in the ground.
Well, little Buffalo Springfield.
Look, there's mine right there, sang one female student. Another female student joked that they should kiss in the fetus graveyard. And it goes on from there, and it gets worse. That is the reprobate mind for you. Would you please consider supporting preborn.org? If I didn't mention them at this moment, I would be remiss. Preborn.org, they are in the trenches. They are trying to save babies' lives by presenting to the pregnant mothers their child in utero by using an ultrasound. It's $28 an ultrasound. If you could support preborn.org, they're opened up now in New York City, right in the heart of Abortion Central. It's ground zero there, and all across the country, babies are being saved because of ultrasounds. If you could support them, that would be wunderbar. preborn.org/wretched, preborn.org/wretched.
Names of God. We learn a lot about God from the names given to him in Scripture. The first name given to God is Elohim in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Elohim is a plural noun, but the verb created is singular. God is plural in personhood, but singular in being. The Creator God is the triune Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Stories, times, story times. More than one. Should have been paying attention that day in English grammar class school. This is Wretched Radio. Not one, but two stories for your consideration. The first from the BBC, from one Damon Rose, whom I am led to believe... is not a believer. Should have been paying it. Kids, pay attention in English class. Otherwise, you will be a grammatical butcher like I have been for the last 45 seconds. This fellow, I do not believe, is a Christian, writing a rather interesting article in the BBC complaining about the people that he keeps bumping into on the streets who say, "Hey, let me heal you." Isn't that nice? Now, we've been hearing about this a lot. This is coming out of the New Apostolic Reformation movement. This is their bread and butter. They train kids at the Supernatural School of Healing how to leg lengthen people on the streets, how to pray for their healing, how to, hey, does it feel better now? What's your back kind of hurts? Okay, how does it feel now? I guess a little better. Look at that. God healed you. Okay. What is a divine healing? It is an organic healing. That's what we see Jesus doing repeatedly throughout the New Testament. The greatest explosion of miracles happened by Jesus Christ, and they were big. No leg lengthenings. These were demon possessions. These were clearly people who were looking not just like, well, I think they've got some struggles. No, they're demon possessed. A boy throwing himself into the fire. Jesus heals him. Boom, gets rid of the demons. The blind see, the deaf hear, the lame walk. They don't get their leg lengthened. They don't get a feeling like, yeah, maybe that's a little bit better here. No, instead we get total, complete healing. Perhaps you're thinking, what about in the Gospel of Mark? I think it's around chapter 8. Let me look. That's no guarantee I'll find it. But we see a partial healing from Jesus. What is that doing in there? We talk about this in Herman Hu, available at wretched.org. Context, context, context. Jesus was telling the disciples, and then he was showing them what he was saying. Does this regularly. One of my favorites is found in Matthew chapter 5, 6. When Jesus is talking to them, hey, you're worried about this, about life. You're worried about clothing. You're worried about food. Look at the sparrows. Look at the lilies of the field. God takes care of them. Quit worrying, O you of little faith. And then in Matthew chapter 8, we see Jesus showing them, giving them a lesson, what he was actually teaching them about having a little faith. Peter, walking on water, starts to go glug, glug, glug. What does he say? No, he's in the boat. He's asleep. The disciples are upset. He wakes up and says, what are you worried about? Oh, you have little faith. This is what I'm talking about here. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't bring up the sails, pull them down, get the anchor up, whatever it is. You do stuff. You don't just let go and let God, but you don't freak out. If God's going to take your life this day, he's going to take your life that day. And you do not need to be in a faithless state of worrying. Oh, you of little faith. You're just not trusting God rightly. Or you've got a little faith in a big faith in a little object, yourself. And then he does it again. The feeding of the 5,000. Then he's confronted with the feeding of the 4,000. The disciples go, hey, we don't have any bread. What are we going to do? And Jesus said, why are you worried, oh, you of little faith? Peter walking on the water. He's got his eyes on Jesus. He starts to go glub, glub, glub. And Jesus says, oh, you of little faith. Jesus gives a lesson, a physical, tangible lesson of what he was talking about. And he does that, I think, in Mark chapter 8, maybe. When he's telling the Jewish people, or he's telling the disciples, you're not really believing very well. And I think that I found it. It was it's Mark chapter 8. I actually got it right. The disciples don't understand. Here's Mark chapter 8, verse 14. The disciples had forgotten to take bread. They didn't have more than one loaf with them in the boat. He charged them, saying, take heed, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. They broke the loaves, and he fed them. And he asked them in verse 21, how is it that you do not understand? How come you're not getting this, that I am the promised Messiah? Look at the miracles that I'm doing. How can you not put these two things together, that my message is being undergirded by the miracles I'm performing? How don't you get this? You're slow to compute this stuff. What is the matter with you? Verse 22, then he came to Bethsaida, and they brought a blind man. The blind man begged Jesus to touch him. So he took the blind man by the hand, led him out of the town, spit in his eyes, put his hands on him. He asked him if he saw anything, and he looked up and said, I see men like trees walking. So it wasn't a complete healing. Every other healing, total and complete. I'm seeing them, but they're like fuzzy, like they could be a tree moving around. Then Jesus put his hands on his eyes and made him look up. And he was restored and saw everything clearly. He sent him away to his house. Peter then makes a confession of Jesus Christ. And what is the next story that we see in Mark chapter 9? The transfiguration. We see the disciples not getting it. They were fuzzy in their understanding. It's getting clearer with the confession. And then they see Jesus clearly in the transfiguration. And they get it. And the healing of the blind, the partial healing, was a physical picture of the disciples. You're still fuzzy. I'm going to make this really clear so you can see me correctly. Other than that, every healing that you see Jesus do was organic and total. From the NAR, the New Apostolic Reformation people, training people to hit the streets and do silly little parlor tricks. From Damon Rose at the BBC, stop trying to heal me. Like many disabled people, I think he's blind. I'm often approached by Christians who want to pray for me to be healed. While they may be well-intentioned, these encounters often leave me feeling judged as faulty and in need of repair. Now, what causes this? I don't know. Is he postmodern? He's 21st century, rather. Anything that could be said is a slight or could be misread or make somebody feel bad. Maybe, but it doesn't matter, does it? He writes, from time to time, without warning or encouragement, I get approached in the street by Christians who tell me they want to pray for me to get my sight back. The message I've taken from the Christians who offered to heal me is, I need to be fixed. Far from converting me. This has put me off to Christianity. So I was interested to learn that it also annoys some disabled Christians. Never hear about that now, do you, from the rather pathetic efforts of the New Apostolic Reformation people, maybe doing more harm than good because they certainly do not have the ability to heal anyone. Story number two, if you happen to be somebody who is struggling with an illness, when you feel like a burden. Several months ago, my husband and I were at the airport going through security. As I was waiting for them to clear my wheelchair An elderly gentleman shuffled through the screener, immediately setting off the alarm. The TSA agent asked if he had anything in his pockets. The older man slid his hands in his pockets, pulled out an antique engraved pocket knife. "Oh, I forgot I had this. I'll put it in my jeans." He handed it to the TSA agent and asked, "Will you give me the pocket knife back after I walk through? Or can you hold it till I get back from my trip? It's really important to me." The agent said, "You can't take it through, and we can't keep it for you. But at the front of the airport, they'll ship articles like this for a fee. You'll have to go back to take care of this and then come through the security again." The man's face fell. He was too frail to do all of this on his own. He locked eyes with a younger man who had gone through the security before him. The older man said, "Son, I'm so sorry to trouble you, but can you get this mailed back to me? I don't want to lose this knife." The young man stepped forward. "Dad, really? You're such a goof-up. Whenever we do something, it's always like this. We're going to be late for our night, for our flight, and I can't deal with your idiot knife. Please help me, son." The son glared at him, said sharply, "Dad, you're making a scene. I don't want to talk about this right now in front of everyone. You make it so difficult. Just go back through the stupid screener." I turned away. I couldn't watch anymore. I was crying when I saw Joel headed towards me, bringing my wheelchair, her husband. As soon as I sat down, he knelt and asked, "Are you okay? What happened?" I tried to explain because I felt so foolish crying over the incident. Finally, I said, "When you're dependent on other people, you feel like you have to be perfect. So when you make a mistake that results in extra work for someone else, you feel like even more of a burden." What the son said is what I assume people are thinking about me. Do you have some physical challenges? Do you feel that way? If somebody's made you feel that way, I'm sorry. Christians don't see you as a burden. We see you as a blessing because we get to bless you. And you are not an inconvenience. And if somebody has been short with you, I am sorry for that. But that is not the way that God sees you. That is not the way that we see people who have challenges and struggles. If you've ever been made to feel that way, or you're thinking that because sometimes maybe somebody gets short or they seem to be a little tired, I'm sorry for that. You are not a burden. You are a blessing. This is Wretched Radio.
Alicia's a full-time nurse. On the weekend, she was running a pregnancy clinic in the highest abortion neighborhood in the United States, Queens, New York. More babies killed than there are born in this place. And she was raising the money on her own. And it's only open one day a week.
We could change that. There could be a pro-life center open 7 days a week, providing free ultrasounds for women by supporting preborn.org/wretched.
Preborn is very intentional and deliberate in providing free, loving, gospel-centered alternatives and ultrasounds to these young women in New York City. We're on it, man. It's not easy, and it's probably going to get a lot harder, I think.
Please join preborn.org/wretched in their effort to save babies and to save mommies through the gospel and stop this cycle. Would you please consider supporting preborn.org/wretched? preborn.org/wretched.
Thank you for joining us. Glad you would listen to Wretched Radio today. Can I share something from the email bag? Hello, Wretched. I cannot say too strongly what the ministry of Wretched means to me on the YouTube machine. The work all of you are doing is God's blessing to me. Please greet all my brothers and sisters in Christ at Wretched, and please thank each of them individually for their service to God and to a fellow wretch here in Australia, Peter. Thank you, mate. Your kind words are truly appreciated. If you would like to share your story, or if you have a question, comment, conundrum, or snark, you can email them to us anytime. idea@wretched.org will get the job done. idea@wretched.org. You can also get a hold of us via Beep Talk, ye old voicemail. Just ring up 1-877-282-BEEP. All we ask is that you keep it pithy and please, no swearing. 1-877-282-BEEP. Hope to hear from you. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
What do these two Bible verses have in common? If one part of the body of Christ suffers, all parts suffer with it. That would be your 1 Corinthians 12:26, Rexella. This is Hebrews 13:3. Remember those who are mistreated, since you also are in the body. We are in a great international invisible body known as the Church of Jesus Christ, the true believers, followers of our Savior. We are in a body together, and right now millions in the body are suffering persecution for the sake of Jesus Christ, and they are praying right now, not for alleviation of suffering, but for a Bible. Would you please consider sending as many Bibles as you can to the persecuted church through Bible League International at wretched.org/Bible.
Revelation. Is the Bible really God's word, or is it just a collection of human ideas? Here are a few words the Bible uses to describe itself. Perfect, God-breathed, authoritative, without error, the word of the living God. The Bible is God's inspired and trustworthy word to humanity, through which he makes himself known and continues to draw us to himself. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Rumor has it he blew up the place. This is Wretched Radio. Don't know if you went to or you viewed the Shepherd's Conference 2019 edition. A whippersnapper, Mike Riccardi. I better stop calling him that because I'm going to be seeing him this summer. Mike Riccardi, a most earnest young man, preaching at the Shepherd's Conference during one of the main sessions. That indicates this young man is a very fine preacher, and he brought the goods. And according to many people, Steve Lawson actually said in his nighttime session that earlier in the day, Mike Riccardi absolutely blew up the Shepherd's Conference. It was magnificent. Remember, it's elders, it's pastors, it's people in ministry. One of the things, there's many things I like about Mike Riccardi, but one of the things that I like about him is that he's willing to bring a little heat, to make the hearers uncomfortable. We don't do it intentionally, like, well, I'm just going to agitate people today. No, that's not the attitude of a preacher. But a preacher realizes if I'm going to faithfully proclaim the word, it is going to do something that's going to get up the nose of somebody at some point. And if you never hear your pastor say something that causes you to go, ooh, that kind of stung a little bit, maybe he needs to bring some heat too. This is Mike Riccardi. Remember, 3,600, well, what is it, about 5,000 people in total at the Shepherd's Conference, preaching to pastors, encouraging them, exhorting them to be the lead evangelist for their churches.
The faithful pastor, the faithful minister, the faithful elder, the faithful servant of Christ and his church must be faithful in evangelism. Just as the faithful pastor must be exemplary in personal holiness, just as he must be exemplary in loving the brethren and shepherding his family, just as he must be the lead discipler in the church and the lead worshiper in the church, so also is the faithful pastor the lead evangelist in the church.
If you are a little bit disheartened that your church is not evangelistic, could it be it's because the pastor is not evangelistic? This is very common. Whatever the pastor is excited about in a church, that's typically what the church is excited about, because he'll preach it in the pulpit. There's going to be announcements. You're going to get the emails. He's going to talk about it in Sunday school. Whenever he can, you're going to hear about it, and it's just going to catch fire. If he's not on about evangelism, the rest of the congregation won't be either. So Mike Riccardi encouraging the pastors with an earshot of his voice, please proclaim the gospel regularly and a lot.
We must get the doctrine right. We cannot be faithful in evangelism unless we get the theology right. We must have a gospel accomplished by an effectual penal substitution, which necessarily issues in the transformation of believers on the basis of a monergistic regeneration. We must have a gospel whose great end is reconciliation with the all-satisfying triune God, accomplished by a justification grounded on the perfect righteousness of Christ to be received through faith alone.
Wow.
But men, if we get all that right and we fail to proclaim it, we are the most execrable hypocrites on the planet.
Well then, I can't even... You're a bad hypocrite, is what you are, according to Mike Riccardi. Now, he's talking perhaps about the pulpit, but he's also talking about on the streets as he goes about his business. We love doctrine, but if it is not causing us to proclaim the good news of the gospel, there is a massive disconnect. A pastor has a challenge. Church is for the sheep, it's not for the goats. But we need to recognize that there are going to be some goats in attendance. 1 Corinthians 14 talks about it. But 1 Corinthians 14 also says that the goat who wanders in should be convicted to the point where they fall down and get saved. So the pastor needs to be preaching to the sheep with an eye on the goats in the congregation so that he is evangelistic even in his preaching, because there could not only be goats, but there could be some people who are deceived. They think they're a sheep, but they're actually a goat. So the pastor must be preaching the gospel from the pulpit.
Back in 2 Corinthians 4:13, Paul says, "We believe, therefore we speak." Brothers, do you believe? Do you believe this message of Christ crucified for the salvation of your own souls? Then do you speak it? Do you speak it in the pulpit? Do you speak it in the counseling room as you wrestle with people through their sins and struggles? Do you speak it on the streets? Do you speak it in your own home, whether to those little unbelievers that are there all the time or the grown unbelievers whom you invite into your home to show hospitality?
The pastor must be the lead evangelist, preaching the gospel everywhere. Was working on a new booklet, just doing the outline. Just finished up Rotten Fish, which is available at wretched.org/fish. Almost done with a booklet on suicide, but starting to work on some other booklets. And one of them was on the subject of money, finances. How much should a Christian spend on this or that? Vacations, cars, luxuries, food. How do you deal with the money issue? And one of the notes that I made for myself was always bring the gospel into each one of these areas. How do you do that? How we spend our money is directly tied to our understanding and our response to the gospel. Do I want to spend my money on... Everybody gets discretionary income. But do I want to spend this discretionary cash on this, or do I want to use it in light of the fact that God sent his son to die for me, a sinner, and wrestle with that? In other words, the gospel should be a part of any conversation on spending. How do I use the good gifts that God has given to me in light of the great gift of salvation that he has provided freely for me? The gospel should make its way throughout all of our conversations, all of our wranglings over issues, our parenting, our marriages. Mike Riccardi, encouraging pastors to be the lead evangelist, to not just teach good theology, but to make sure that theology leads to a proclamation and a pleading.
And not just do you speak it, but as our passage says, do you plead with sinners? Do you beg men and women to be reconciled to God through Christ? There is to be an urgency and an earnestness with which we are to herald the terms of our King's proposed reconciliation to his enemies. Our proclamation of the gospel cannot be a cold, detached, impersonal, matter-of-fact recitation of facts. Mm-hmm. Christ died, you need him, take it or leave it. We can't just tack on a little gospel refrain to the end of our sermons. This proclamation that we have been commissioned with is earnest entreaty.
Heard that a number of times, haven't you? The guy preaches, and it's on money management. And if you're here today and you've never accepted Jesus, with every head bowed and every eye closed, I'd like to ask you now to ask Jesus into your heart so that your mistakes, oopses, and boo-boos can all be better. And just put a little Band-Aid on your owies, kiss it, and make it better for you. So ask Jesus into your heart. Plead with sinners. We all should. I was at a university campus a week or two ago, I can't remember, and I was talking to a young man, and he was very nice, this fellow. It just struck me. This is a nice kid. And so working through the law, it was a little bit on the playful side, and I realized, you know what, this just does not have enough earnestness to it. It shouldn't be this jokey. It should be a little bit more urgent. And so I just went, look, all kidding aside, and this kid sobered up like a judge. Well, at least most judges. This kid just, all of it, it's like, okay, I'm plugged in. You kind of gave me a tone there that says this is important. Our tone should say this is important because it is important. From Derek Brown, 7 things we often mistake for evangelism. 1, having a conversation about God and religion. That's not evangelism. If it doesn't include the gospel, if it doesn't include the law, if it doesn't include repentance and faith and a call to salvation, talking about the Bible is not evangelism. It's nice. It's good. But it's not evangelism. Defending the Christian faith. That's good, but it's not evangelism. Discussing important social issues. Telling someone they're a sinner. Because until you've offered Christ and his death on the cross, you haven't shared the good news. Doing good deeds. That's good, but that's not evangelism. Living a holy life. That's nice, but that's not evangelism. Should we do these things? Absolutely. But let's make sure that we are proclaiming the gospel and not confusing other activities with evangelism. And Pastor, might I echo Mike Riccardi and encourage you to become the lead evangelist. Lead the way, sir. The fish rots from the head and it flourishes from the head. And if your church is not evangelistic, is it possible, sir? It's because you are not evangelistic. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.